All right, welcome back. Thanks for listening to the program. This is hour number two of Christian Worldview with Dr. Tony Beam, and we're glad you're listening to the show today. Yeah, we're going to crank it up for you here. In the next hour, we try to keep it cranked up all the time. This is Tony Beam, Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference, and where we are every day equipping transformational leaders for the church and society. It's an exciting place to be in the day and age in which we live. I serve as Director of Public Policy also for the South Carolina Baptist Convention, and I'm interim pastor at Impact Church over in Spartanburg. We had a great day yesterday. I haven't even posted it yet, but I took a video of some of the baptizing that was going on. We baptized five people yesterday, and it's always a great day in the body of Christ when you're celebrating the death, burial, and resurrection of a new person into the kingdom. I mean, that's really what baptism is. You know, people sometimes they wonder about Baptists. Why do you guys use so much water? I mean, are you obsessed with water that you have to put people under the water? No, it's the symbolism of going under the water is a symbol of death and burial. And the symbol of coming out of the water is a symbol of resurrection. And I don't know of a better way of relating that testimony than the way that we do baptism. So anyway, five people yesterday. I was very excited. We just overall just had a great day. Had an event last night at Shipwreck Cove over in Duncan, which is one of the water parks that the county has and manages. And we were there with another church, and that church was charging for admission, which is fine. It's their right to do that. But we were handing out basically armbands and letting people in for free and serving them pizza and drinks, you know. So, but both churches, I think, had a great time. And we had a good fellowship with the people that were there all the way around. And so it was a great evening. All right, back to this Mar-a-Lago and some of the fallout here. So we kind of walked through it at the top of the hour. You know, why the warrant? Why obstruction of justice charge? Well, again, if documents were signed, and I haven't seen the documents, I don't know where they are. According to the Justice Department, they are in possession of them, that say that all of the classified material was turned over. Then that's where the obstruction of justice is coming from, that Trump was not cooperative. He says he was cooperative, and he was to a certain extent. But if he withheld documents, and it's true that they signed off that there weren't any down there, and there still were, for whatever reason, that would be a violation of the law. And then criminal handling of government records. And again, none of those, it doesn't matter if they're classified or not. So when you hear... Some people, I hear, are making the argument that because Trump declassified all these documents, that's the end of it. There's nothing here. No, not according to the law. The law doesn't specify. These laws talk about the possession of these documents and their classification. If it's government information and government property, the classification can add to the severity, but it doesn't mean that just because they were declassified that no laws were broken. So that's just put that out there. The warrant raises legal questions because it was vague in what specifically they were looking for. Now, the Fourth Amendment basically says you have to have probable cause, but you also have to have if you're going to get a warrant and you're looking, if the government is looking for something, if police officers are looking for something, they've got to say what it is that they're looking for. And this is what the warrant said. All physical documents and records constituting evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, and other items illegally possessed. Now, that's pretty nonspecific. Andrew McCarthy said that the warrant defies the Fourth Amendment by being a general warrant that lacks specificity, that you can't just say, well, we're looking for documents that might be illegal. we're looking for fruits of any kind of illegal endeavor. Now, I don't know how warrants have been upheld in the past. Maybe the government has gotten by with language like this many, many times. But I think the there's at least a legal challenge to be made for the warrant itself because it's not specific. It's more broad, more general in its application. And if you, I mean, you get the warrant tossed, then any evidence that was seized, you can't use it in court. Back in February, the National Archives raised concerns that Trump was holding classified materials at his residence. We talked about that, turned over the 15 boxes. We talked about the written statement. So what does President Trump say about all this? Well, as you can imagine, it's a hoax, it's a witch hunt, it's illegal, it's an attempt to prevent him from running for office again, it's the corrupt FBI, and there's been a lot of threats against the FBI on social media. You had a man, and we don't know why yet, but he ran his car into a barrier around the U.S. Capitol, got out as his car burst into flames. He fired some shots in the air and then took his own life. And according to Capitol Police and people that were there, they never fired at him. There were no shots fired by the police that he fired into the air and then killed himself as officers approached him. So, you know, and they're of course, the Washington Post and New York Times is making this out to be a huge threat, and it very may well could have been, but we don't know that yet. The police are investigating this guy's background. They're trying to find out what motivated him because he's dead and he can't tell them. So, you know, could this be someone who was motivated by a lot of this negative talk on social media? Could be. It could be a guy that's got severe mental problems. I mean, he fired into the air once he ran his car into the barrier. If he was actually trying to overthrow the government, he wasn't very good at it. So, you know, we don't know yet. We need to wait to find out. But we do know that it's, and I mean, in my mind at least, it's not a good thing to have all these threats against the FBI and against the Justice Department. They're having to put out advisories to Justice Department officials and to FBI agents and to other government workers that there's credible, legitimate threats. There's talk of civil war. There's talk of going after agents and trying to, you know, get retribution against them. So this is not the way that people in a civilized society with a constitutional republic in their hands should behave. But it's the way that some people are behaving. So how do people feel about this? I mean, what is the sentiment that's out there? Well, increasing number of Republicans and independents, according to Cabot Phillips over at Daily Wire, say that politicalization has infected the FBI and the DOJ, especially as it relates to this investigation against former president. So Trafalgar and Convention of States got together and conducted a poll. And this is what they discovered. 77% of Republicans and 54% of independents believe the raid was conducted for political reasons. 70% of Democrats believe the FBI search was an impartial investigation into potential crimes by President Trump. Now, as I've said over and over on this program, two things can be true at the same time. And I think that's what's going on here. Is it true that the FBI has had its reputation tarnished and it is right for people to question the integrity of the FBI because of past acts? Yes, absolutely. Is it also possible that the president's committed crimes here? Yes, it is. So both of those things can be true. But the way you look at it is, you know, this is the evidence of the politicalization of the whole thing. Because you've got 77% of Republicans and 54% of independents say that this is pure political tomfoolery going on here. And 70% of Democrats say, no, this is a legitimate investigation. And it, lest you think it's just conservative polling that come up with this, Politico and Morning Consult poll came up with this. 72% of Republicans disapproved of the raid. 85% of Democrats supported it. 47% of independents approved of the raid, and 32% disapproved. So independents are a little bit more approving, according to Politico and Morning Consult, than the Trafalgar and Convention of States poll would indicate. But still, that's a pretty good number of independents who say that this is not a good idea. And it is possible for those two things to be true at the same time. It's possible for them to say that they approve, while at the same time to say that they believe it was politically motivated. Look, saying that it's, was this a politically motivated event? Of course. We're talking about Trump. We're talking about the Justice Department that refused to investigate other acts that were suspicious or brushed them under the rug by other leaders. That, you know, is this, are there politics on the table? Even if they're not intending there to be politics, which I think there are, there's still politics on the table because of who's involved here. This is Donald Trump, the most polarizing political figure of the last probably 100 years, or at least 50 years. And so any action is going to be considered political. Gene, appreciate your call this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. The demons are active. Yes? No? What do you think?
Oh, always.
All right, very good. I'm glad to hear you agree with me on something here. I want to remind you about some statements made by the head Lefkowitz in Washington, D.C. That's Chuck Schumer. I call him the head of the Lefkowitz movement. And if you're from New York and you're very familiar with the Lefkowitzes, you'll know what I'm talking about. Ira might have an idea from what I've just said, but I'm not going to go into that any further. Chuck Schumer made some statements essentially stating that there's a deep state apparatus that will intimidate you and harass you. What did he say? 7 days to Sunday, the deep state will get you. That was one statement. Then his verbal assault on Kavanaugh and other conservative members of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, he threatened them.
Go ahead.
No, I just said he threatened them. He openly threatened Kavanaugh and others on the Supreme Court, trying to intimidate.
Right, right. Yeah. So that, you know, this is what the Lefkowitzes do. Now, I find it fascinating that NPR is very, very concerned about the threats that are coming to the FBI, and you know, we ought to be, right? I mean, you know, the FBI
is supposed to
be our law enforcement agency, investigating agency. And as you pointed out in a poll there, that many of us are now very suspicious of the FBI.
Right.
But where were these people when Black Lives Matter has, and still does assault local law enforcement? Not a word from these people. And and Black Lives Matter has entrenched itself into no-go zones in all these Democrat Party cities. But not a word from the Lefkowitzes about this group.
Yep.
So, I mean, who's committing sedition here?
Well, I'm not arguing with a thing that you said, Gene. Everything that you've brought to the table is true. But I don't know what it has to do with whether or not President Trump violated the law here. So are you saying, let me, and you may not be saying anything like this, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just asking you, are you saying that because the Justice Department has demonstrated a bias against conservatives and people of faith, and there's no question they've demonstrated some bias in that regard, and a willingness to overlook the crimes, just the outright crimes of some, including Hunter Biden, including Hillary Clinton, and that list can get to be pretty long. So because all of that is true, if the president violated the law, that should be ignored.
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
In fact, I mean, if the government goes after Hunter Biden and Hillary Clinton or any of those other people, I honestly, I don't care anymore. I'm at the point where I've recognized Washington, D.C., being ushered in part by the Lefkowitzes, the Lefkowitz movement, is corrupt. It's beyond. I think that they've hit such a point. They've hit a point of reprobation, and it's very, very sad that I have to pay taxes to these people to tell me what to do for the rest of my life, or to tell my family what we're going to have to do for the rest of my life. When these people are morally corrupt and basically they're fools. My mother had a saying for such people: they think they're so smart, they're stupid. Yeah. And that's the sad reality of what we have guiding this country today. Now, as far as Donald Trump goes with this episode, yeah, I'm highly suspicious is the word I'll use of their intent. And but they have to move on their operation, and hopefully the legal affairs and matters will be settled. But remember what the head Lefkowitz said: I'll use the deep state to come after you.
Okay. All right, Gene. Thanks. I appreciate the call. Eugene is now on the phone. Hello, Eugene.
Well, good morning, Dr. Tony. I wanted to call a little earlier, didn't have an opportunity. If I may just step backwards a little bit, so to speak, on the abortion issue. You see, in this country currently and always, there are zero exceptions for an abortion. If a young woman whose life could possibly be threatened, they must appear before a judge who will consider that. Other than that, there are no other exceptions whatsoever.
And, oh, you're talking about in the Philippines?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I got confused there for a minute. I forgot where you were calling from. Okay. Yeah, that's a very strict law that respects the life of the unborn child and puts it on the same level as the life of the mother. Now, and the law that we would pass here in Colombia actually spells out all of the medical possibilities that could lead to a woman losing her life because of a pregnancy. And it makes exceptions if those conditions exist. So instead of just saying the life of the mother, which is often thrown in just as a catch-all, that this bill, consultation with gynecologists, OBGYN, medical doctors, sir, everybody that gets involved in this process, they've come up with these are the instances where a woman's life could become endangered by a pregnancy, that most of the time that when a woman, if a woman is in distress because of her pregnancy, what you want to do is to deliver the baby. I mean, it doesn't improve her chances for the baby to die or for her to go through an abortion. So it spells out these specific cases where that could be the case. It doesn't have to be, but a doctor could make that decision based on those circumstances that he's facing. So I would like for that to become the law, but we'll have to see how this plays out in the South Carolina legislature. But thanks, Eugene. I appreciate the call and appreciate the update on what the law is in the Philippines. Back to Gene, my conversation with Gene. The point that I'm trying to make here is I don't think anybody, I think a reasonable person can look at the Department of Justice, listen to comments that Senator Schumer has made, and understand that there's a radical element within the progressive Democrat Party, which is what it's become. Their moderates are so without power in the Democrat Party that it really doesn't make any sense to refer to the moderates that just don't have any say-so. The party is completely run by the far left progressives, and they're very aggressive in the way that they want to threaten and intimidate and come against people who disagree with them. And there's no question about that. But there's also no question that because the Justice Department before has demonstrated possible bias, and I think we should leave the door open that the people in the Justice Department, the FBI, are just not very good at their jobs. I mean, now with James Comey, there's no question that that was politically motivated. He did not want to indict a candidate for president within an election process as close to the election as we were. I think that all came out in July. of 2016, and the election was going to be in November, and there was you know, he just, rather than following the law, he made a conscious decision that it would be better for the country if he found a way to keep from indicting her. I just simply think that we need to follow the law regardless of where it leads, and we don't make exceptions for people because of any position that they might hold. So, and that's not what the FBI and the Justice Department did. I think they're purposely holding off on Hunter Biden so that they don't embarrass or ensnare the president of the United States in a scandal right now. And I don't believe that's right. I agree that confidence can be lost in the FBI and the Justice Department when their impartiality seems to disappear. And that seems to be what we have. They're not impartially, in an impartial manner, enforcing the law. They're enforcing the law for one group and not for another. And that undermines confidence in the government, and it furthers the possibility that people will step outside of the institutions of America to try to fix a problem. And once that happens, then we're in a lot of trouble. But again, all of those arguments, you know, when I hear, and I'm making them, I've got a list right here. The Justice Department, for example, lied to the FISA court to obtain surveillance warrants on Carter Page and others. We know that's true now. We've discovered that they lied about it. The Department of Justice accepted information on behalf of Hillary Clinton from Sussman, who was running for president, and they pretended they didn't know that they were receiving political material. They just took it at face value. The Russian collusion hoax was pushed by the Department of Justice, and the whole thing turned out to be nothing. The DOJ wasn't interested in obtaining warrants to search Hillary Clinton's home when they knew that she had classified information on an unsecured server outside of a government building. This is a clear violation. Just because it's in emails or it's documents exist in a server, it's the same thing as if you have a physical document outside of a secure location in a government building. And the Biden family has never been raided by the FBI, despite abundant evidence of multiple crimes being committed by Hunter Biden that may well have been participated in some degree by other members of the family, including his father, who happens to be the president of the United States. And yet there's no, as far as we know, no open investigation going on into any of that. There is an investigation going on into Hunter Biden, but it's not, as far as we know, been widened into other areas where when President Joe Biden was vice president, he could have been using his influence to help his son gain lucrative contracts with people like China. And so we see all this and we become very disillusioned and discouraged. And then we just want to say, well, then, yeah, Trump shouldn't be held accountable here. I mean, and this is what I would say if Trump, and this is what the sequence of events, the evidence presents itself so far, that from what we know that was taken from Mar-a-Lago and what the FBI has in its possession, from what we know from meetings that took place with President Trump, his return of 15 boxes of documents, his lawyers signing off saying that there were no classified documents left at Mar-a-Lago, and then we have a search that turns up 11 separate sets of classified documents after it's been said that there were none. If this, just imagine with me for a minute, if this was Vice President Kamala Harris, or if it was President Biden after he leaves office, would anybody be calling the Justice Department into question here? Or would we be in the cheerleading section? What we need to be in the cheerleading section about is the rule of law and how it applies to everybody. And all of this, what's gone on before, yeah, there was bad stuff that went on before, and they've behaved badly. We're not going to fix that by them behaving badly again and ignoring another set of criminal activity if, in fact, that's what's taken place. by simply papering over it or saying, well, he's going to run for president again, so we're going to leave this alone. I don't want it to happen for Hillary. I don't want it to happen for Hunter Biden. I don't want it to happen for Sussman. I don't want it to happen for anybody. I don't want it to happen for Trump. Because the rule of law needs to be abided by, and we're not doing ourselves any favors by saying, well, if they didn't abide by it over here, then we don't want to want them to abide by it over there. Where's the rule of law? It's gone. All right, Philip's on the phone. Philip, go ahead.
Hello, Tony. Yeah, I agree. What really troubles me is that we have reached a point in this country. First of all, I have no doubt that Trump is guilty. No doubt, because he's arrogant. And because he has the same contempt for that side as they have for his side.
Right.
So he feels he's above everything. There's no doubt. I love the guy's policies, but he's arrogant. But here's my problem. I really believe that God is sovereign over everything. But I have to put that in the margin for a moment and say, I believe that this country is hopelessly broken. I do not believe, with all of my heart, and I've been studying history for 50 years, that the difficulties in this country can ever be brought under reason anymore. People speak and they walk away. No one says, like they used to say, hey, you know what, you have a point. Let's go have coffee and talk about it. We're all talking from a point. We don't give any credence to the other side. If Trump is guilty or not, it seems to me he's the one guy in this world that they fear. They don't fear any enemy. They don't fear any communist. They don't fear any Iranian government. They fear the people who can vote them out of office. And that's why they're going crazy to get rid of Trump, because somehow they feel that he's going to be able to beat them. And that's why whatever happens, no one will believe it. That's my problem.
Oh, yeah. No, you're Philip. You're right. It's a very
Go ahead.
No, I was just I've been talking about this for last week and this week and for a long time, really, on the program. It's a very dangerous situation that we find our democracy in, our constitutional republic. It can survive a lot of things. It cannot survive the total abandonment of trust in its institutions. If that happens, when it does happen, and you have total abandonment of it. You have civil war. It's happened one other time, and it could happen again. I pray that it doesn't. But I fear that the seeds are being sown for that, even as we're doing the show this morning. But, Philip, thanks. I appreciate your thoughts and taking time to call the program. Very well said. Short segment, and then we'll try to get back on time here. You may be asking yourself, gee, is this a Southern Baptist employee who works for a Southern Baptist university and also for the South Carolina Baptist Convention and is the interim pastor at a South Carolina Baptist church? Is he going to talk about the fact that the South Carolina Baptist Convention is under investigation by the Justice Department in light of all this other stuff with Trump and all? Yeah, I am going to talk about it, but very sparingly. And then I'll explain to you why. I'll just simply confirm to you that the Southern District of New York, the attorneys from there, which this is federal, so it can be from anywhere, they can run. It doesn't have to be from in their jurisdiction of the Southern District of New York when you're talking about a federal case, are investigating the report that was issued by Guidepost and investigating other information that came out of the Guidepost investigation. They have decided to launch an investigation into some of those things. Now, I'll confirm that that's happened, and then I'm not going to say anything else about it, and here's the reason. Because I'm a trustee of a Southern Baptist Convention institution. I am a trustee of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. And when the Southern Baptist Convention comes under investigation, they are investigating all of its entities. So I can't comment. Now, well, let's just leave it at that. I can't really say anything else. I guess I could say I don't think there's anything that the ERLC is going to be specifically looked at for, but there's nothing to indicate that that's the case. But it still, as an entity of the Southern Baptist Convention, then we're going to ostensibly be under the microscope as this investigation goes forward. And so as somebody who serves as a trustee, I can't really talk about the details. I can't. You can read about it in news reports, and you may not even hear me talk about the news reports as much, simply because I'm not a bystander. I'm not somebody on the outside of this looking in. I'm somebody that's on the inside, and I have to be careful when an investigation is underway about the things that I say. And so the best thing for me to do is not to say anything other than it's happening, and you know, we'll just have to wait and see where it goes. There's a lot of places that it could go. I mean, who knows? Once you start an investigation like this, I mean, you got, you know, and there's no telling how long the process will take. So I will say this, you know, does this taint the mission of the Southern Baptist Convention? Well, you know, Southern Baptist churches are autonomous churches. They don't operate as the convention except for once a year when they meet to make decisions. And so most Southern Baptist churches every day are about the business of proclaiming the gospel, the truth of God's word. They're about the business of seeing lives changed. I told you that yesterday at Impact Church, where I serve as interim, we had five people baptized. That means five people may have made the decision to follow Jesus and to have their eternal destiny settled to be in heaven with him for eternity when they leave this world. And there's nothing more that I mean, the angels in heaven celebrate that, and so we need to be rejoicing along with them for sure down here. So the work of the convention goes on. We have missionaries all over the world that are doing incredible things, seeing people come to know Christ and ministering to people in horrible circumstances and situations. I know because I've been with them. I've been to places like Bangladesh and to places like Romania and to Hungary and to Moldova and to Jamaica and to places around the world where there's a lot of devastating poverty, people hurting, people under oppression, and Southern Baptists are there ministering, winning people to Christ, providing for their needs, and our disaster relief program is second to none in the world. When we show up with food and clothes, and we do the right thing. And all of that ministry, all of those good things are going to continue while this investigation goes on. And so, you know, some may say, is it worth it to be a Southern Baptist? Well, all I can say is for me, okay? For me, from everything the good that Southern Baptists do and have done and will continue to do far outweighs the things that happen in any large organization that can call some portion of it into question. And so I would say, yeah, support the work of what Southern Baptists do. We're the largest Protestant denomination that is left that is trying to hold the line when it comes to truth. There may be people who have made terrible decisions that hurt the reputation, but the work is good work, and it needs to continue. That's really all I can say about it. All right, we got one segment left here this morning. Let's wrap up today, using the Morning Dispatch headlines as a way to kind of catch up on what's going on around the world. The House did vote on Friday, 220-207, along party lines. All Democrats voted for, all Republicans voted against, as far as I can tell here, to pass the Inflation Reduction Act, is what it's called, which is, that is an inaccurate description of this bill. Economists will tell you that it will have minimal, if any, impact on inflation. And many economists say that the impact it will have will be negative, that it'll actually cause more inflation because of the spending. So But regardless of that, that's what they call it. That's going to be the victory lap. They're going to tell the American people that they've whipped inflation by passing this act, and any reduction in inflation, any move on the inflation meter is going to be directly attributed to this bill between now and the election. That's why they wanted to pass it before Labor Day, because Labor Day begins the official run up to the midterm elections. And inflation in the economy is the number one thing on the minds of voters. So if voters can be convinced that it's the Democrats who passed a bill, and any time they see any relief in either gas prices or any kind of inflation between now and election, the Democrats are going to try to point to this bill and say, see, we fixed this for you. Now, hopefully, thinking American people will reject this and see that it's ridiculous. There's nothing in the bill, first of all, that addresses inflation directly. And there's nothing in the bill indirectly that's going to ease inflation. If inflation is eased, it will have nothing to do with this bill and its passage. So please keep that in mind. A federal judge, and of course part of the bill, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow, the IRS, just rightly, wrongly, whatever, however you want to put it, has amassed an arsenal of weapons. And the question is, if we're hiring 87,000 new IRS agents, then why are these IRS agents, or why is does the IRS need weapons of any kind? I mean, they're supposed to use the law. They're supposed to be using court. They're supposed to be using whatever is available to them under the rule of law to get people to pay their taxes. Why do they need to stockpile weapons? So we'll talk about that. I think there's reason to be concerned about what could be described as the radicalization of the IRS. Now, you know, there are things that point to that taking place that we need to pay attention to. And we're going to talk about some of those things tomorrow. We don't have time to get into it today. We know we've talked ad nauseum about the unsealed warrant and the receipt of materials, what was taken from Mar-a-Lago. The FBI and Department of Homeland Security on Friday reportedly issued a joint intelligence bulletin warning of increased threats of violence against federal law enforcement and the FBI after the FBI's Mar-a-Lago search. And we've talked some about that already today. Salman Rushdie, which we haven't mentioned, who is 75 years old and is the author of a very controversial book called The Satanic Verses, which is a book that, according to the Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran, basically slandered the Prophet Muhammad. So a fatwa was issued calling for his death. And he's been under death threat for a long time. And this goes back to what, 1988. Satanic Verses was a novel that was published back then. Rushdie is considered by many to be a talented author and writer, but he was attacked by a 24-year-old New Jersey resident who pleaded not guilty on Saturday. So we have to say allegedly he was attacked, even though the attack took place in front of a room full of witnesses. Rushdie was reportedly off of a ventilator and able to say a few words on Sunday. But it is possible that he might lose one of his eyes, and is dealing with damage to his liver and the nerves in his arm. He was attacked while he was on stage. He was stabbed multiple times before they were able to get the attacker off of him. And so, this is Islamic extremism being played out in public. I mean, this is. You know, can you imagine if this person was saying, I'm a representative of Jesus Christ and I'm attacking this person because I don't like what he said about the Bible? We still would be having that conversation. That would have been pushed. That would have pushed everything else off of the news headlines. But as it is, this is something that everybody understands that Islam stands for. at least a sect of Islam, is violent and calls for people to be killed if they write things that can be considered insulting to the Prophet Muhammad. Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid said a Palestinian gunman acting alone wounded at least 8 people on a bus in Jerusalem early Sunday, including, according to the State Department, at least 5 American citizens. It was the first such attack in several months and came shortly after a ceasefire was reached between Israel and Gaza-based extremists. Basically, what you had was Gaza began firing rockets into Israel again, and they put up the Iron Dome to catch as many of them as they could. But the way the Palestinians, terrorists, Hamas-sponsored and Hamas-backed terrorists, the way they defeat that is they fire so many that it's just impossible to shoot them all down. And so some of them get through. Now, thankfully, they're not very technical in their guidance system, so a lot of these rockets fall in areas where they don't do any damage. And some of them do damage. And so in response, Israel went into Gaza and conducted raids on Hamas leaders and took several of them out, and that led to a ceasefire. But it's an uneasy time because these attacks are continuing. By the way, if you're interested, Ben Shapiro, I think you have to be a Daily Wire subscriber maybe to get the Sunday show, but you might be able to get some of the podcasts for free. He interviewed Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday, and it's a fascinating interview to hear about Netanyahu's father, who was instrumental in the return of the Jews to Israel and the gaining of Israel as a state. And of course, then Netanyahu has been prime minister 5 times. That's more than anybody else ever in history in Israel. And he's now a candidate to become prime minister again over there. So he's not going away anytime soon. California Governor Gavin Newsom proposed legislation Thursday that would halt plans to close down the Diablo Canyon Power Plant, the state's largest nuclear plant that provides almost 10% of California's power over the next 3 years. Newsom's plan would offer $1.4 billion forgivable loan for relicensing the plant, circumvent strict environmental impact reviews, and keep the plant open for about a decade to help California meet its power demand while cutting down on fossil fuels. See, this is the catch-22. That progressives are in. They hate nuclear. And nuclear is not a fossil. It is a renewable source of energy. It's not a fossil fuel. It's a clean way to provide power. And of course, what is the problem? Radioactivity is deadly to human beings. And an accident can cause major problems. But you cannot, finally, the governor is acknowledging that even though he's with the environmentalist wackos, you can't shut down a plant that's giving California 10% of its power when they're in an energy crisis in California. It's just progressive ideology doesn't work. It may look good on paper to some people, but in reality, you can't live out its principles. We'll see you tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Hope you'll join us.